This is the Tame Aperture Podcast.
Open the pod bay doors, Count.
I'm sorry, Dave. I'm afraid I can't do that.
Welcome to the Tame Aperture Podcast, where we talk about all things movies, from first-time directors, indie films, art house, and much, much more. Today, we've got a double feature coming at you, courtesy of director Zach Cregger. We're talking about Barbarian and Weapons. My name is Alan Martindale. I'm an editor and filmmaker, and along for the ride, as always, is Gabe Wienendahl, filmmaker, film instructor, and film evangelist. Gabe, we are in my fucking wheelhouse right now. We're talking some horror movies by probably my favorite director right now, Zach Cregger. And we're doing it. So first of all, let me say this before we
You're
start.
You're coming straight out the gate,
I am, dude. I've been ready for this podcast for years, man. From the first time I saw Barbarian, I've been ready for this. So as always, go watch the movie, and in this case, two movies, before you listen to this. Because, I mean, we say that, well, we should say that every time, but especially for this one. Because these movies, if you have not seen Barbarian and Weapons, go in blind. That's the only way to go in. Otherwise, it won't have an effect on you.
Yeah, don't be reading any synopsis,
don't.
Summary, otherwise.
Yeah,
just go straight in.
Don't even look at any trailers. Just go in blind.
No expectations.
None at all. Now that I've said that, I fucking love these movies, dude. I love them.
I mean, he's coming right out the gate.
I am. I mean, I'll just tell you right now. Like, they're not perfect. The reason why I'm such a big fan of Zach Cregger is because of the uniqueness of both of these films. So it's they're just not anything I'd ever seen before. And that's so hard to do nowadays because everything's been done. Every idea's been done. And it's just, how do you come up with something that hasn't been seen and done to death a million times? I don't know how you do it, but he figured it out. What do you know about Zach Cregger?
So outside of you persuading me to watch The Whitest Kids I Know. Did I say that right?
The Whitest Kids You Know.
Whitest Kids You Know. See, I didn't even say it right. And I had watched skits of those, and then we watched
the Civil War on Drugs.
Civil War on Drugs, and that's one of the podcasts from a while back.
It is.
Which I actually enjoyed. It's a funny movie. Not a lot. I didn't know a lot about him, and so realizing it's hindsight to me. It's like, oh, I kind of knew about him because you had influenced me to go watch some of these things. And then I watched Barbarian and I watched Weapons and I was like, that's the same kid?
Right, right.
Wait a minute, that's the same guy that did those movies?
Yep. It's about 2010, 2011, something like that. I think it was like 2010. And I'm flipping through my TV and I just happened to land on, I think it was IFC was the network. And it is just a sketch show. And I don't know what the hell it is, but I'm laughing my ass off. And it turns out it's called The Whitest Kids You Know. It's a sketch group. And I am not being hyperbolic here. I think they are the best sketch group ever in the history of anything. They hit almost every time.
We've been doing this podcast off and on for 6 years. For that 6 years, you've kept persuading me and telling me to go watch that series, to which I watched YouTube reruns of it and then the movie, Civil War on Drugs. So, yeah, it's not hyperbolic because you've been – you're the freaking preacher of the Whitest Kids You Know.
People get tired of me. Like, everything my wife says, she's just like she'll just say some innocuous thing, and I'm like, that reminds me of a Whitest Kids sketch. It's either that or The Simpsons for me. Always. Everything comes back to those two things for me.
And if you think about that culturally, that's crazy.
That's crazy.
Because everyone, I could throw out Simpsons, and even if you didn't like it, societally,
right,
culturally, everyone would go, The Simpsons.
Right.
We know.
Right.
So you're putting those at the same
To me, those
tier.
Are the two things that I laugh the hardest at. And I've seen them all a million times, and I still laugh just as hard. Now, I know it's not for everybody. I get it. But for me, it just hits me in the right spot. It hits that humor in the right spot, and I love it. So,
first of all, I just got to say that's the biggest compliment you could get as a creator, as a filmmaker, if someone resonates at the level you're talking about, if I'm Kreger, is that, did I say his name right?
Yeah. Yep.
I always feel like I'm saying it wrong. If I'm Zach Kreger, like, or the people in that ensemble, that's the best positive feedback you could ever receive from anybody.
I think so.
You know?
I mean, there are a couple duds here and there in their sketches, but not many, dude. Like, not many. And I'm going to stop, you know, going off on how much I love them in a second. But, like, I can watch any other sketch show, and there are it's pretty close to an even number of hits and misses. And for me, it just, they don't miss very often. It's awesome. So, that's why when COVID hit and everything shut down, Trevor Moore, who is the head writer of The Whitest Kid You Know, and one of the directors, he and Zach Kreger were actually the directors of every episode. He started doing YouTube videos, just dumb little funny as fuck YouTube videos. And then that turned into them doing live streams together. So they would all get together, and it was during COVID. It's when everyone was, you know, super, super stressed out, and it was scary, and no one knew what was happening. But every Friday and Saturday, I knew I could watch these guys, and I looked forward to. It was something to look forward to at a time then there wasn't much to look forward to.
Yeah.
So I remember that fondly. I will say this before we jump on. Barbarian was not Zach Kreger's first direct. Everyone says it's his directorial debut. It's not. It's technically his third movie he's directed. Mm. So the first, any guess?
The Civil War on Drugs?
That was the second one. The first one, it was a 2009 sex comedy called Miss March. Terrible. It's terrible. He and Trevor Moore wrote it. I think they wrote it, but they directed it. They co-directed it. And it was a massive flop. Nobody liked it. Even Zach has talked about how, like, it stressed him out and it bummed him out so much that it was such a bad movie. It did not turn out how he wanted. So, considering...
Which I'll just say, as continually aspiring, passionate filmmakers who are where we're going out and doing shit, we're trying to keep making stories, you know? Totally resonate with that.
100%.
Where you put in all the effort and then it doesn't land the way you hoped it would.
I mean, I heard Zach talking on this, one of the streams, actually. He was talking about the first time he knew that they were in trouble with the movie is when it was just when the editor was putting together dailies. And he was like, oh, fuck, this is bad.
I feel like as a filmmaker, there are times where you go, oh, we have a movie. I know whether it resonates hard or it's like really solid. I know we have something.
Yes.
There's a movie here that's fine. And whether it hits the way we want it to or not is whatever. But you know something. You're telling me if you're in the dailies.
Yeah. It's not a good movie. I tried to watch some of it for this and I couldn't make it very far. It does have some laugh out loud moments. It really does. But for the majority of it's not great.
Remind me of the name again?
It's called Miss March.
Okay.
And I'm going to double check and see if they wrote it. I know they co-directed it. I don't know if they wrote it or not.
It's a comedy drama. It's an hour and a half comedy drama.
Yep, they both wrote it.
What's interesting is it stars Zach Kreger.
They both star in it. Yes, and Trevor. It's not good.
It's got some notable names, however you want to consider that. You've got Craig Robinson, which
by the
is
way,
a comedian.
Do you want to know what his character's name is in that movie?
Horse Dick.
Horse Dick.mpeg. That's such a great name. See, it's got moments that are funny, but the majority of it's
funny.
Pretty bad.
It's got Hugh Hefner.
Yeah, well, it's about...
I haven't seen it, so.
It's about his character is about to get laid on prom night, and then he falls down the stairs or something, goes into a coma, and then when he wakes up, his girlfriend, who's going to get laid by, is now Miss March in Playboy. So then he goes to find her, so I don't
but,
know.
But the idea that if the story revolves around some kind of Playboy plot, that you got Hugh Hefner to agree to be in the film?
Yeah.
That's pretty big.
Pretty good. And then came Civil War on Drugs, which go listen to our review. I think it's cinema gold.
I didn't feel the same, but I did. But I did. I didn't not like it. I was fine with it.
And for context, that one is more, it was a feature that they made, but then they ended up chopping it up and putting it at the last segment of their show for their last season. So that gives a little bit of context. It's not, you know, it's not quite cohesive, but it's good. It's more Monty Python-esque,
yeah,
is what it
for
is.
For sure.
And so then if you are a filmmaker, you've made Miss March, which is terrible. Everyone hates it. Box office flop. It hurts your reputation. They were like in their 20s, I think, when they made it. And it was their first big studio deal. And then you make The Civil War on Drugs, which really was not, I mean, no one really knows what it is. It's really, you know, tacked on the end of a sketch show on an obscure TV network, cable network, right? So I can't imagine when you are going to make Barbarian that you have much confidence. Because I think the pressure's got to be on. Because he pulled a Sylvester Stallone. I don't know if you knew this. So he had people who had read the script and they wanted, and I think it was studios, who wanted to buy the script but not have him direct it. And he pulled a Sylvester Stallone. He said, I have to make it. This is my baby. And it turned out to be like just out of nowhere, breakout hit.
I love it.
So.
The confidence, too.
The confidence of that. Like, to me, like for me, knowing who I am and how self-conscious I can get, if I have a massive failure, my first outing, and then, and I, after Whitest Kid stopped, what did he do? You know, I don't even know what he was doing.
I mean, that was my biggest takeaway, was like, I was looking at some of his history. It's like, what has this guy done?
Right.
And I know he's an actor and he's probably done some intermittent acting here and there. And I was like, what has he done? So the idea that he went and wrote something, and I want to say, though, somewhere in there I read that pretty much like A24, all the big names were like, nah, we're good.
Interesting.
I got to look it up, but I think they all said, no, we're good. They gave rejection letters. They're like, we don't want
this. After the film was finished?
After he wrote it.
After he wrote
it,
okay.
And he was trying to present it to distributors and production companies. Hey, I got a movie here. A24 and others were like, hey, we're good.
Oh, dude.
Anyway, so.
Well, think about it. Let's put on, you know, people like to shit on studios, and I get it. Like, I totally understand. They get in the way a lot of the time. But their ultimate goal is to make money. And his two directing credits are Miss March and Civil War on Drugs, you know? Like, you're not going to have a ton of confidence being like, here, take this.
Look, Alan, he went from the Whitest Kids You Know, which is fine.
Right.
To a horror auteur.
100%. Yep, that's it.
So what was, which for me as a filmmaker is inspirational. Right. It's like you went from something that was good and it was fine, or it maybe teetered and sucked and then was, you know.
Absolutely.
Now he's a horror auteur.
I know. He did do a little acting. He was in a TV show called Wrecked.
Yeah.
That I tried watching, and I didn't love it, but it, you know, it was what it was. And then, but a lot of people do like it, so it just wasn't my thing. And he was in, I think, a show called Guys with Kids or something that was on NBC. I don't know. But apparently that was like a big thing. I don't know.
He's out there building his network.
Yeah.
A little bit.
A little bit. But there's not a lot, you know. It's kind of just acting roles here and there, and not a lot. It's funny you mentioned that it's inspiring, because I was watching their streams religiously during COVID, and when he went off to make Barbarian, and then it actually inspired me to get my ass up and actually make my dumb little short film that I had a script that I've been sitting on forever. It's just a 3-minute short film, yeah. But it's a lot of work, as you know, to make a movie, and so it was inspiring and it got me to do it. And so it is interesting that you say that, because I had the exact same reaction. It is.
The leap is crazy, because now you're, I mean, we went into this thing and I had mentioned, look, I actually think based on the last two films he's made, which is the ones we're going to talk about here shortly, which is Barbarian and Weapons, he's now Hitchcock modern day level. he's two in a row that you go, those are fantastic auteur horror films.
Absolutely.
These are not just movies that you chalk up to a franchise like Friday the 13th. And I love those movies. Love them. I love Nightmare on Elm Street. It's one of my favorite. That whole franchise I love. And they're different, right? It's not the same type of thing. And he's kind of revamped and reframed the modern horror film in his own way. And so he went from a sketch comedy to a horror auteur, which is crazy.
It's crazy. And not only he made fun horror movies that aren't campy, you know, like it's a lot. Most of the fun horror films we see these days are campy on purpose or retro on purpose. And that's totally fine.
Yeah.
But it's we've seen it before.
I mean, I've made them. Like in the last 5 years, myself have made short films that are essentially homages.
To me, that's what's so crazy. That so when I went in to see Barbarian in the theater with my wife, I knew that if it sucked, I was going to be super bummed because I like the guy. I like White as Kids, and it's a horror movie, and like all of his horror sensibilities are very similar to mine, what we've talked about, like what I've heard him talk about in the past, like Texas Chainsaw Massacre is his favorite movie. And anyway, so if it sucked, I knew I was going to be bummed, like super bummed.
You were going to go home crying.
I mean, maybe not crying, but I was going to be like, oh,
you were gonna
dude,
cry.
Like,
it's fine. It's okay.
This is going to, it's probably going to cry. Probably going to cry.
Zach.
Yeah. Why? But it ended up, I loved it because it just, you didn't know where it was going.
Yeah.
How often do you do that? Or do you see that anymore? And not just in horror movies, but in any movie where you don't know what's happening, even structurally.
We've become familiar with how horror films are played out. And I still love them. We both do. And you're even a bigger aficionado in the horror realm than I am. But I love horror movies. I love scary movies. But he changed the viewing experience. And the first, because I was kind of following along, if we're talking about Barbarian, there's something in the shock factor.
Yes. Yep.
For me, with the first 20 or 30, 40, whatever it is, minutes into the film, it feels very suspenseful, thriller, horror. It, you know, we got a stranger in a house and they're learning, is that the creep? Is it reverse? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Then there's a structural, just what the story structure just blows up. What was it for you? I think I know what it is, but I want to make sure I'm not misstepping here.
As far as?
What was that structural change that just that flipped it on its head?
They go from the basement, the very cramped, crowded, claustrophobic basement, to wide open California convertible with Justin Long. To me, that's when it just
flipped. But for me, like, and that makes, yes, where they change the structure of the story, you're right, where it like changes the POV and where it's dark. And, but that moment where I actually was not expecting what happened. This is the, there's a moment
saying.
In the, there's a moment in the tunnel with Bill Skarsgård, and I'm like, wait, what? Because in my head, I'm thinking the way, because here's how I thought of it, and I could be way off, and maybe other people didn't think of it this way. I thought Bill Skarsgård either was the creeper, the guy that was the serial type killer, right?
Yep.
And then all of a sudden, he's dead.
Yeah.
And his brains got smashed in.
I'm so glad you said that, because
I was like, wait, what happened?
So for I don't know if you're familiar with how the writing of Barbarian started.
No idea.
So it was basically, and I'm paraphrasing, so I may get some of this stuff wrong, but I think I'm right on this. So Zach Cregger had just read a book, I guess, about the red flags that women always have to be watching out for. And as a man, he just was completely unaware of all of it. Had no idea.
Mm.
And as men, we don't have to worry about that.
Yeah, I don't think of it.
And so he wanted to, it was like a writing exercise, trying to see if he could write a scene with all of these red flags that women have to watch out for.
You mean like sharing an Airbnb with a man you've never met?
Exactly. Going like him.
Whereas like if it was a man and a man, like if I went, okay, so if I went into an Airbnb and we had double booked for whatever reason and it was a woman,
mm-hmm.
I would be fine with it.
100, yep.
I wouldn't, yep. In my natural instinct would be like, oh, that's fine.
Right.
It'd be weird.
Right.
And I would be polite about it and whatnot. You know what I mean? You
right.
would, you know, you'd be the
Well, you'd march right in like you own the place,
but
right?
But I wouldn't, no.
Just kidding.
I wouldn't. It would be weird and I would probably, well, that's a good point because I might actually leave, but I wouldn't think of it as a threat.
Right, right.
Like I might, if it double booked, like, look, if we're talking, like, this is a great point. Like if we're talking, I might go, oh, well, I guess you can have it. I'm being serious.
Right,
I might
sure.
be like, oh, you can have it. I guess I'll figure it out with the, you know.
Yeah.
Or if you were to do the thing that they do in the movie, like if you stick around.
Yeah.
I wouldn't feel it as a threat, though.
Right.
But on the reverse of that, I can see where that, yeah.
Absolutely. He's also, she says she doesn't want tea. He makes it for her anyway. Like he touches her stuff without her permission. You notice that she takes a picture of his license. It's just all things that as a dude, I would never think to do. But for women, like they got to watch out for this stuff. So that's what it started out at, just like an exercise in trying to do this. And then he thought to himself, well, it's so obvious that Bill Skarsgård, that his character is.
Yeah, he's going down the trope.
Right.
He's like oh, this is the guy.
It's so obvious that he's the villain here. So I need to switch it up to make it unpredictable. What do I do that? And he discovered it as he's writing. And that's what I love about when I've heard him talk about him writing scripts, he figures it out as he's writing. Like he doesn't sit down and write an outline. And to me, that's where kind of a lot of the strength comes in. He's able to do that, to kind of freeform it.
I feel like that's the best way to do it. And
I
not having, you know, and you've written things and I've written things, it's like I don't actually recall writing out full-blown treatments and outlines. I just kind of let it go. And it sounds like he's got that, but he's got that locked into a level that's like kind of far superior.
Well, he's a huge fan of David Lynch, yeah. as we all are.
Yeah.
He attributes it to transcendental meditation, which is David Lynch is big into, which may or may not be a scam, depending on who you talk
was
to.
Was big into. Now he's dead.
Yeah, now he's dead. Rest in peace.
Just bring in the morbidity.
Right. Exactly. You. That's what we do here. But so, like, I don't think transcendental meditation in itself is a scam. I think that they charge thousands of dollars to learn how to do it, and I think that's a scam. But that's just me. What do I
but,
say?
But I can relate to that. Like, having written the one that you helped me produce recently. Like, I didn't go into it with some full-blown treatment
right.
and outline. I didn't know what I was doing until I just discovered where it took me. And it's more comedic, dramatic, but it's like, it just takes you there.
That's the fun of writing. Like,
yeah.
I know, and a lot of people dread writing, and I do too, obviously. Like, a blank page is a terrible thing to look at. It just is. But once you start getting into it and you discover it, that's the fun. Like, that's why I love editing so much,
yes.
Especially like documentary stuff, because there is no script. Like, you're finding the story as you're going. To me, and it's a puzzle. You're putting a puzzle together that exists. You don't know what it is, but it does exist, and you're just finding the pieces and putting them together. And to me, that's so satisfying.
100%. It's interesting, too, because when you bring that up about Barbarian, it's like having taught film classes myself, I go. And I try to tell students this, but I think that sometimes we get so bogged down in formulaic structure that creatively and artistically we forget to push ourselves. We go, oh, we got to hit act one.
Yep.
We got to get to the, you know, the plot device here, and then there's the thing here, and the boom, boom, boom.
Yep.
It just keeps going. And you're like, that's kind of, to me, like I get where it can help.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes that's boring.
That's why I didn't write for so long, because I was so scared of that, of the formulaic stuff.
And that's why I think Barbarians, for me, when I walked out with my friends and my wife who are not filmmakers and writers that love the art form, and they liked it. They were fine. They thought it was a good movie. But I was like enthralled with it.
Yeah.
I was like, this is,
yep.
this is like, it was a craving that I had. And so when I first saw Barbarian, when that moment happened with Bill Skarsgård, like my trained brain was like, oh, that was unexpected. I hadn't. And that, here's the thing. At that point, I went, oh, shit. I got no idea what's happening.
That's, yes.
I got no idea. I thought I knew because I was just following the formulaic structure, and then all of a sudden, boom, 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 against the wall with some, which we don't know what it is until later, now he's dead. And so that structure was, this is what I loved about the writing, the structure was literally in the movie shattered with skull fragments.
Absolutely, yes, absolutely. Well, it's even up to the point, you don't know if Bill Skarsgård is the villain until he's dead. Yes. Like, you don't know whether or not he's a good guy, bad guy until he's dead.
Literally, Alan, if you think about the writing, the structure of the writing we think we're following, and it's shattered, I'll say it again, with skull fragments.
Absolutely.
It's crazy.
And the other thing is, that was kind of a full short film, the first 40 minutes.
Yeah.
Like, that's it. You could have ended there, and it would have been a fantastic short film.
Yep.
But
that's going to Sundance.
Yeah, exactly. it's also somewhat formulaic, but I mean, but it kind of hits the beats.
It does, but it's an act break that you don't expect. If you think the first act break is going to end a certain way and you go, oh, yeah, we're familiar with how that goes, it breaks and it literally breaks and shatters. It's not, it's a shift. And you had mentioned it. It's like, go from that to the cut of Justin Long in California in the whatever. The act break is now a whole nother movie.
It is.
It's not the same movie anymore.
And the thing I loved about these different acts is that each of these stories are enthralling in themselves. Like, there's not, like, exposition is boring to me. Like, a lot of setup is boring to me. And maybe that's just an ADHD brain thing, or I don't know. But I get bored. Like, I don't need a lot of backstory. This is why I used to read a lot of Stephen King, and I can't do it anymore because there's so much backstory and boring stuff. And, like, these were actually interesting, the way he put it together. Not too much exposition, enough visual storytelling. Like, it's just enough to keep me entertained, and the characters are strong enough in themselves to keep me interested.
It's always crazy to me if this is this sign, and what do I know? I don't know anything. I make movies that no one sees, and I teach classes that no one cares about.
False to both of those
it's
things.
It's basically true, but I mean that. But, like, here's the thing. If you're able to pass the baton, because the whole first part, I'm thinking of, I think it's Tess. Is that her name?
Yeah.
The character? And then I can't remember Bill Skarsgård's name as a character. But, though, like, that whole movie in the first 30, 40 minutes is based on those characters, and he's done a good enough job for me to go, I'm in.
Yep.
And then he changes the whole movie, and he passes the baton to a whole nother set of characters.
Yep.
That's not easy to do. So the fact that he does it is pretty incredible and makes me go, oh, yeah, that's pretty amazing.
The balls, man. The balls.
Yeah.
Coming off the Civil War on Drugs in Miss March and The Whitest Kids You Know. The balls to just, like, fuck you. I haven't made, like, a really acclaimed movie, and I'm just going to destroy all of your rules.
Yes. And here's a question I have for you, pertaining to that, kind of mixed into weapons. And I mean that by, there's an unpredictability in Barbarian, right? It's unpredictable. Did you feel the unpredictability in Weapons, or did it feel like that trick can only work one time?
I think...
Do you know what I mean?
Yes, I know. Yes. If he had done it the same way he did it in Barbarian, it wouldn't have worked. Another way to change it.
That's it for me. The Barbarian shift is the act break where you pass the baton to new characters. With Weapons, he's smart because he doesn't go down the same path. He goes, oh, let me just do a fragmented narrative, which is compartmentalized into six different viewpoints.
Yep.
Right? And that's how he passes the structure and the baton to different characters. He doesn't do it the same way he did it in Barbarians.
Yep.
And so, anyway, structurally, I'm pretty blown away about how he approaches it, because he's not trying to do the same thing in rinse and repeat.
And the characters are so strong in all of these. Every character is is really, I don't know what it is. It's obviously the writing. It's obviously the performances, but he just is able to write these people where you're really interested. Weapons is depressing. Weapons is so fucking depressing. It's a really like dark movie, and every single character is going through it, and I still was enthralled with watching their story.
Which makes me think, and I'm just looking at notes that I had. I actually went to Weapons. I've only seen it twice. I saw it once when it first came out, and I just watched it again today. It's still in theaters.
Yep.
Which is crazy. But you're like, but if you look at it, like, it is depressing. And I was watching it, and I was writing notes here like, oh, that's about this, and that's about that. And this, it's like pretty sad.
It's very sad. We talked a little bit about the origins. Oh, go ahead. A little bit about the origins of Barbarian and writing that. Do you know what the origins were for writing Weapons?
I don't know, but my only guess is like what, and it's probably way off. This is probably way off from his inspiration. But when I was watching it again today, I'm in the theater. This is the best part about movie theaters, by the way. I went to Weapons, and Weapons has been out for a long time. So guess what? At the 4:15, 4:30 showing, nobody was there.
Yeah.
Guess who was? Me. By myself. And it was fantastic. And when I was breaking it down in my head, I just kept breaking down the different character POVs with one theme descriptions.
Okay.
And I don't have them all, but I'll give you a couple. Okay. One theme is alcoholism.
Mm-hmm.
Obsession. I can go through these. Like Josh Brolin's Archer Graff. He's obsessed. And he feels like he let his family. Like there's fatherly. I'm just taking each little theme from each of those six characters. And I go, oh.
Yeah.
He's hitting on these things and then putting them into a story and basically six different short films.
Yes. Yes. And he has said that every one of those characters and Weapons was autobiographical to an extent.
Totally understand that. I did not know that, but watching it again today, that makes 100% sense.
So he started writing Weapons. So we talked about The Whitest Kid You Know. We talked about his writing, directing partner, and really good friend, maybe best friend, Trevor Moore. Well, Trevor died short. It was actually like a couple days after Zach got back from shooting Barbarian, and I think Bulgaria, I think, is where they shot it. And so Zach comes back. They do their return stream together. So every Friday they did just him and Trevor would do a stream together on Twitch. And that night after they finished, Trevor had been drinking and he fell off the balcony and died. And so it was, you know, super tragic. It was just one. I mean, celebrity deaths don't get me. Like I've never understood that. This one kind of affected me a bit. Like it was like such a shock. I was like, holy shit, I can't believe this. This is nuts. Because you do have a little bit of a parasocial thing when you're watching these people interact, even though like they're putting on a performance on a live stream, you're still getting more of them, more of what they really are than your like interviews or featurettes or whatever. So there's definitely a parasocial thing there, but, when Trevor died, you know, they were best friends, writing partners, directing partners. Zach wanted to live in that grief without it being self-destructive. He's an alcoholic, recovering alcoholic, addict. He's done everything under the sun. So in order to just live in that grief and kind of process it, he started writing Weapons, and which is a total movie about grief. Mm-hmm. And that's why I think it's so dark. There's so much alcoholism, like you said, issues. Like,
there's addiction issues. And like in my notes, like every little bullet point has something referring to alcoholism.
Yes.
And I did not know what you're telling me. I 100% did not study it, didn't look into it. That's really interesting. And he's and unfortunately in a very tragic way inspired by that.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then to make this even darker, he said that final chapter with Alex and Aunt Gladys living in the house together, basically, and Alex is basically just a prisoner. He said that's how Zach felt growing up with an alcoholic father. He'd go to school. be fine, and then he'd have to go hide in a house and be terrified all the time. So
and pretend that everything's okay.
Exactly.
Because there's a scene in that movie where Miss Gladys?
Aunt Gladys?
No, what's her name?
Gladys.
No, the teacher.
Oh, what is her name?
Miss Gandy.
Miss Gandy.
Sorry, I was getting them. Gladys Gandy, there's too many G's. Asks him, is there, like, she stops, she's stalking him and asking, and she's trying to figure out if everything, because she's also going through her own grief and her own turmoil.
Right.
And she asks him, and he's like, everything's fine, just leave me alone.
Yes.
And he's a kid. And all he's doing is trying to pretend that everything's fine when it's not, in the place that he's going to go to when he gets there, which is the house, his home.
And holy fucking shit, man. Like, go ahead.
I was just going to say, like, I did not know the things you're sharing, but like in my notes.
You picked up on it.
Like, only on the second watch.
Right. Well, the first watch, you're so dumbfounded. What's happening?
Well, I'm a little, yeah. But when she, because Miss Gandy goes to Alex's house and earnestly she cares about him. She wants to make sure he's okay. Cause this tragic thing has happened. All the kids have now disappeared except for him.
Yep.
This is getting deep and I'm going to get way deeper than it should.
No, let's do it.
But it's like every kid has moved on and it's not even about, we can get into the witch. That's straight up from the get go. We know
right.
he literally gave us the outcome of the story.
Yes.
He writes it and we see shots of it all throughout. It says witch.
Parasite. There's a lot of talk about parasites.
Yes. But like the thing with Alex to me is actually more poignant. It's stronger. It's crazy.
And
because she goes to his house, she looks inside, she sees two parents who are zombies. Okay, well, alcoholism, if you're obsessed and you're a zombie, you check out, you're not there.
Yep. You're not human anymore.
You're not human.
Yep.
And so anyway, I can see his perspective, especially from the young Alex character. It's crazy.
I'm trying to figure out the best way to say this. That last chapter, it felt intense. Like, it felt heavy is what I should say.
Super
like when
heavy.
He goes home, like, you feel his relief when he's at school. And even the visual storytelling of I don't know if you noticed, but they put him very low when he's sitting at his desk. So the desk is like almost up to his chin. So like even just stuff like that, the visual storytelling is great. But when he goes home, it feels heavy.
Feels real heavy. And there's even a scene in the beginning when Miss Gandy has a dream, which is the other thing I noticed watching each POV. Was like a lot of those POVs, all of them have an element of the witch, which is cool.
Yep.
Because it's like they, it's the subtext of what, so like the one I'm thinking of specifically is Miss Gandy has a dream. She's in the classroom. All the heads are down of the kids on the table. Alex's head's down too. And then when she gets alarmed and like woken up is when Alex lifts up and sees the witch's face.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
You think it's a clown.
You think it's a clown at first. When you're watching it, you don't know necessarily. I didn't know on the first watch it was like a witch.
Oh, yeah. There's no way. There's, no. Yeah, of course not.
It's crazy.
It's so good. And speaking of discovering the story as you go, he started, all he wanted to do, he wanted to have a little child narrator telling a story.
Love that.
He didn't know what the story was. Let's find out. Let's write it down. Then he gets to a point where...
Well, you can tell where personal relationships to what he's writing in the story come to life. Like, those are things that he probably felt as a kid.
Yes.
Like, I can see that now that you're saying that, and I didn't know that backstory, but I go, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, shit. and I'm like, that's good storytelling. That's good writing.
It's such good writing. And then he gets to a point where... he's writing and the kids have all disappeared and he's like, I don't know why they disappeared. Let's find out why they disappeared. And then he's just finding the shit as he's going. And the way he tells it and the way David Lynch used to talk about it is like when they do transcendental meditation, they're trying to catch the big fish. Like all these ideas are swirling around above them and they're just trying to catch a big fish. I wish my brain could work like that, man. Whatever the fuck they're tapping into, why can't I do that? That's all I want, man. Give me a, like, whatever they're smoking, whatever they're doing. Maybe it's worth the $20,000 you got to pay to learn transcendental meditation.
I don't know what it is either, but I feel like I can get there if I do the right, if I take the right drugs.
No doubt. Just eat a bunch of mushrooms and just write some stuff down.
Yeah.
How did you think, after knowing Barbarian was what it was, and you're going in to see Weapons for the first time, first of all, what were your expectations for it?
Here's what's crazy. Like, I didn't, until we decided to do these two movies, I actually didn't put two and two together.
Oh, really?
Okay. No, because I wasn't doing a deep dive. So, in other words, I wasn't like, oh, it's the same guy.
Okay.
It's the same director. I didn't know that until later, after I had watched both.
Okay. The dog is going crazy.
Lucifer. Come here.
Lucifer.
That's, by the way, the best name for a dog. By the way, we should get Lucy in the podcast because she might actually bring more views.
Yeah, she probably will. We just got to start filming her.
I called her name and she came over and I'm saying hi to her.
Lucy.
She's fine.
See, but she's got to have attention all the time. She doesn't have attention.
Let's be honest. She's got the cutest face I've ever seen.
She really does. It's ridiculous. Okay, come here. Here, you want to get on my lap?
Here's a question that I have, though, because I didn't know that he directed and wrote both of these. I didn't put it together until later. What I want to know is, I mean, we're clamoring about it. We're fawning over it. And I think rightfully so. I think people that aren't filmmakers probably don't resonate with it the same way we do, or that are people that love film like the way we do. The question I have is, and this could be an interesting kind of controversial question, is he carving out a space similar to Jordan Peele? So culturally, like, Jordan Peele has come over the last 5 to 7 years and just kind of redefined how we're looking at horror and suspense thrillers and things like that. He did. I mean, he kind of changed, for me at least, some of the game and how I perceive things. Is it different than that? Is he different and creating his own little niche and doing his own thing?
I think so. They're actually pretty good friends.
I didn't know that, but I feel like they're both kind of tonally they're different, but they're both carving out this space in the horror genre, which is cool.
I think it's really cool. They were actually friends even before Zach blew up with this stuff. Like, I don't know how they knew each other, but they were friends. In fact, another interesting fact, after Barbarian came out and the script for Weapons was kind of making the rounds, there was a bidding war over the script. And Jordan Peele,
can we just say one thing?
Yeah.
I don't mean to cut you off.
So no, go for it.
Hold that thought. You got to remember, Barbarian, $4 million. Budget. On a budget, and then it grossed over $45 million. So Weapons was a no-brainer.
No-brainer, exactly. Sorry. And so there's a bidding war for the script for Weapons. Jordan Peele, who is one of Zach's very good friends, his company did not get the script, so he fired his agent. Jordan Peele fired his agent because they didn't win the bid for Weapons.
Was this... Okay, I think, and once again, have not done a ton of research, but I did have hearsay. Was this the thing where Weapons premiered? Was it a Sundance premiere or a South by Southwest premiere?
Just the script?
I think they premiered it, and then distributors, or how did it work?
Well,
because sometimes you'll make the movie, you'll premiere at a big festival, a distributor will come in and go, oh, purchase price is X amount of dollars.
Right, right.
That wasn't this.
No, that wasn't this. Okay. So this was just the script.
Just the script.
Just the script, knowing that Zach would be attached to direct. And that's crazy. Like, his good friend didn't get it, so he fired his agent. Like, Jordan Peele. Like, you don't get many bigger, hotter names right now. Like, anything that he is even touched, they're plastering his name all over. Whether he is a producer or just, like, a consultant or something, like, they're going to put his name all over it because he is huge. So,
and he owns a company called Monkey Paw Productions.
Yeah, yeah. So I thought that was just a...
And so whoever was part of Monkey Paw, it sounds like, well, from what you're saying, who didn't pick that movie up for Weapons was like, Jordan was like, why are we not getting this?
Yes, exactly. Like, that's kind of inexcusable. last geeking out about Zach himself. Do you know what his next two projects are going to be?
I have no idea. Before you tell me,
okay.
I have a bunch of other questions, which we'll get to. Okay. But you tell me first what his next two projects okay. are.
So the second one, I don't know what it is, but it's going to be hard sci-fi. So not horror, straight up sci-fi.
Love
which is, I thought was interesting. The next one, though, that he's filming now, Resident Evil.
Okay.
They gave him Resident Evil. He said he hasn't seen any of the movies, but he's a huge gamer. He's played all the games, and he wants to make a movie that made him feel like he felt playing the game, where he's got one bullet left and he's got to come down a dark hallway and he doesn't know what's coming. And like, he wants to make a film that makes him feel that way.
I mean, I'm interested. Look,
yeah.
Based on the last two at bats, this dude is 1,000%.
Yeah.
So if we're just basing it off the last two.
Yeah.
As we know in sports, that's pretty damn good.
It's good, but I think M. Night Shyamalan was batting 100 at his second movie, too. So you never know,
that's
man.
That's true. That's true. I think it's hard to hold on to those.
It is.
Okay, now I got some questions for you.
All right.
Before we get into ratings, and then we'll dive into that. If you had a budget of $4 million for Barbarian, why do you think it blew up the way it did? Was that marketing, word of mouth? Was that quality of work? Like, what was it that made it blow up? Because going into it for me, like, I like horror movies, so it came out in 2022, and I'm gonna check it out,
right?
But it wasn't, I don't know what made it blow up, because it became something.
It did.
So like, what do you think that was?
I think a big part of it, I really don't think you can downplay this enough, or I don't think you can downplay it, is Bill Skarsgård. He was hot coming into this. He was It and a bunch of other stuff that I can't think of off the top of my head.
He was Pennywise the Clown.
And that was huge. Like, that first It was terrifying.
I did read this. He executive produced Barbarians, or was one of the executive producers?
I didn't know that, but it doesn't surprise me.
I'm thinking he was.
That's probably why they were able to do all this under $4 million. Because he had some
That means he had to have read the script and been like, hell yeah.
Yeah.
This is dope.
For sure.
Right?
But they also had Justin Long. I mean,
yeah.
Like, I mean, he doesn't even come in until the 40-minute mark or 45-minute mark. It's crazy. I don't think Skarsgård was the only thing. I think it's a horror movie with Skarsgård, and just structurally, like we talked about, it's all over the place, and it's breaking new ground. And I mean,
we didn't dive into the movie, but going to it with my friends and one of my good friends who's not like a horror lover like we are. We love horror films. We walked out laughing our asses off because both of us were like, mama. Which film do you think will age better or become a cult classic? Because you can't hit cult status until time proves it out. Ooh. Like right now, we both love them. Don't get me wrong. Barbarian, Weapons, great movies. I mean, Weapons culturally probably resonated harder because it had a broader audience.
Right.
But I think. But, you know, what one ages better 10 years from now?
I think the one that's going to have more staying power, I'd say is Barbarian probably.
Interesting.
Because
tell me why.
I've seen Barbarian, I think, 3 times. I've seen Weapons twice. Rewatch value for me, Barbarian is way higher. And I think it's because the mystery in Weapons is so intriguing, and you just want to know what happens. But once you know what happens, I just want to see the gore. I just want to see your head get ripped apart. Like, that's all I give a shit about. I mean, I shouldn't say that. But it's just, for me, the rewatch factor was just stronger, a little bit stronger with Barbarian. I still love Weapons, don't get me wrong.
But. Yeah, as we know in the podcast, I'm pretty bullish on rewatchability.
Yeah.
And I actually didn't think of it that way. When I think about, if I was to call it now, I go, Weapons is the higher quality film.
No doubt.
But when you say that, I go, oh, you actually might be right. Because rewatchability with Barbarian is higher.
Yeah. So, but do you think Weapons?
No, because now you've switched my film evangelist mode to like, once again, bullish on rewatchability. So I think you're right.
You just made a movie about your love for
I
80s.
Know.
And,
I
yeah.
know. Well, I can watch Ferris Bueller's over and over. Well,
who can't?
I mean, come on.
It's so good.
So you bring up a good point. When I first thought of that question, like, you know, which one's got more, what'll age better? I thought in my head, weapons, because it has so many societal implications or things, you know, we talked about some of them. But yeah, probably Barbarian. Would you rather, okay, here's, okay, this is a split between the two. Would you rather explore Barbarian's basement, the thing? Like, I'm yeah. talking literally, not in a movie
right.
sense. Would you rather go into their basement in Barbarians or the biggest secret in weapons, like the figuring out of the witch or whatever it might be? Like, what one do you want to dive into? I mean, in a literal sense, do you want to go into Alex's house and find the witch, or do you want to go through Ooh. The basement?
I mean, the easy answer is I'd rather go to the house and deal with the witch. But honestly, being able to go through secret tunnels sounds fucking awesome. It sounds awesome.
You're like a rare breed that way.
There's no doubt. Like, yeah. And honestly, let's be honest. If that happened to me in real life, there's no way I'm going down there, you know. But the idea of it sounds super fun.
Because Bill Skarsgård's character goes, so they go in, right? And then they find it, and he keeps going, and then he gets the whole thing, and you can go watch it. But, like, I don't think I want to do that. I think I'd rather just go to the house, and in my head, I'd be like, let me save Alex, because his house is shitty.
Also, I mean, I cannot go any further without talking about Richard Brake, the creepy dude who's, I mean, that guy is so scary. And like, he just is scary in everything he's in. Like, he's the only good part about any Rob Zombie movie he's been in.
Is he, because he's the, now tell me who he is, because
he's the dad.
Incestual father.
Exactly. He's the guy who has the dungeon in the house.
Who's. In his, it, just by his face is creepy.
He is, yeah, dude. And the way he talks, and he just.
No offense to him, but.
I think he's made a lot of money off that, so. But he is just, everything I've seen him in, he just scares the shit out of me, man. He is scary. Like in 31, which is a Rob Zombie movie. It's not a good movie, it's terrible, but he's fantastic.
But it's also like, what great casting, because.
So good.
In Barbarian, you hand that, but we talked about these baton handoffs, because Barbarian continually changes, it breaks the axe over and over.
Yep.
And then you hand it to him, and he's so enthralling. He's so interesting. He's creepy, and you want to watch him. You don't ever think, oh, what just happened to all the other stories that we were following, you know, 10 minutes ago?
I forget. Like, when they go to Justin Long's character, I forgot all about George.
First off, Justin Long was also a perfect cast because he's hilarious.
He's hilarious. He's likable.
He's likable.
So yep. When he turns out, here's the thing. Here's how good Justin Long is. The most likable guy probably who ever existed, right? I can't see him now without being creeped out. I really can't, because he did such a good job in this.
But that scene where he's the owner of the home, and then he finds out these tunnels.
Yeah.
And he's measuring out the real estate.
So when,
and by the way, he walked by a camera and like a blood sheet and like a weird dungeon room and didn't give a shit.
Well, he's sitting on the bed and he's trying to figure out, you know, if he can earn more money on it. And then he just like looks down and sees the stains. And goes, oh, gross.
Oh, gross. Can we up the value on the square footage?
But when we went and saw that, Jess looked at me and she goes, he talks just like you. Like, when he's measuring, he's like, oh, yeah, bitch. Like, she's like, that is, you say that
that's
all
hilarious.
The time. Like, it's like, oh, that's great.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. I mean, look, we're just fawning over everything. The movies are great. Which of these two movies would you show someone who says they don't like horror?
Ooh,
You can only do one.
Probably
okay, now it got to step outside, because both of us love horror.
Right.
Which one do you give them?
I think I'm giving them Weapons, because first of all, I think Barbarian's scarier.
True.
And Weapons, the stories, it's intriguing on its own without the scares.
Yeah. Strong. I don't want to say stronger story, but more relatable across a broad spectrum. Like people that don't appreciate horror are going to be like, oh, Weapons is a story. It's a movie.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. So you're going Weapons too.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd go Weapons. If Weapons were a cocktail, what's in it? or let me change it up. If Barbarian were a cocktail, what's in that cocktail?
Oh my God. There's definitely tequila in there. Without a doubt.
If there's not tequila with a worm, I'm out.
It's probably some Jägermeister too.
I mean, I feel like it's a concoction with no... there's nothing else. It's just Jägermeister, tequila, pour in some beer, pour in some
vodka. They're not even putting
vodka.
Bitters or there's, anything.
Yes,
it's just
constantly changing.
Yep, I agree.
Crazy. Final thoughts on Kreger's trajectory. Where does he go? Like you had mentioned a couple things. Sounds like he's doing some game adaptations.
Yep.
Does he hold the heavyweight title still? Because I feel like right now he's at the top of the world. You know, what's his trajectory like? Does he have that potential to keep holding that?
Because
he's going to shift gears into different genres. That's hard, but I feel like he might be someone that can do that. I don't know.
I mean, we've seen lots of people, whether it's in sports or, you know, what art or whatever, we've seen lots of people start at the top of their game and then fall off. And it happens all the time in film. So I'm not going to say, like, definitively he's going to just keep shooting for the moon. But he's got as good a chance as anybody. I mean, I'm sure he'll have some duds here and there. Everyone does. But, like, his style, his sensibilities, the way he writes, the way he directs, like, he's got everything I love.
Yeah.
And so until someone takes that title from him, he's got it as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I feel like he came out the gate. He hit two home runs. He's got two of them right now. I think it's hard to make that adjustment. But if anyone's going to do it, it feels like him. Because I always also feel like there's a place, if you come from comedy, which is, I think, in some ways harder than some of the other genres.
Dude, I totally agree.
Comedy's hard.
It is so hard. Like the timing.
Just in general. So I think he's got the potential to keep pushing it. So I'm rooting for him, but he'll probably have a few whiffs.
Yeah. I mean, the fact that he's taking on Resident Evil, and to me, just, and again, I don't know the guy. I just basically am his best friend because I watch him on stream. So I know everything about him. But yeah, I mean, gamers are notoriously, they rip apart any sort of adaptation. So it'll be interesting to see what happens if he doesn't stick the landing, if it's not up to their standards. But the fact that he is a gamer that might...
I mean, the chance, here's what happens. If it doesn't land, he turns into M. Night Shyamalan.
Which is my biggest fear.
You go yep. two home runs out the gate,
yep.
and then you just do trap 20 years later.
Do Lady in the Water or
and
whatever.
Guess what happens? In 20 years, when we're still doing a podcast that no one listens to, Kreger comes back and does the podcast with us. And we talk about
exactly.
all his ups and downs.
When he's trying to resurrect his career. Before we go through all the reviews and give our reviews and obviously read the listener's favorite Google reviews, which are awesome, I want to just quickly pull up the last two movies that Zach did. And give you the ratings from IMDb and Rotten Tomatoes. So, what would you think? First of all, Civil War and Drugs. Let's start with that one, even though that wasn't his first film. Any guess?
For IMDb?
For IMDb.
4.8.
7.6.
Whoa!
Because, you know why? Because the only people who are watching that fucking movie are Whitest Kids fans.
Okay, that makes more sense.
That's the only reason why, I guarantee it.
We could go back to our podcast.
Yeah.
We could look, but that makes more sense.
And there are not enough ratings for either critics or fans for Rotten Tomatoes.
Okay.
Miss March.
For Civil War on Drugs.
For Civil War on Drugs.
Okay.
Let's go to Miss March. Any guesses on Miss March?
On IMDb or Rotten Tomatoes?
Let's start with IMDb.
IMDb's got to be like 3.2.
Actually, it's better than that. IMDb.
Because they're always a little hard, is my point.
I know. IMDb is 5.0 on 23,000 ratings.
Wow. Good for him. He got 23,000 people to vote. Man, now, I can't even get 23,000 people to watch my film. And I actually think my movie's pretty good.
It is pretty damn good.
For what it's worth.
Okay, now let's move on to Miss March on Rotten Tomatoes. Any guesses?
It's got to be rotten at like 48%.
5%. 5%. That's critics. Okay. 5% critics.
I was going more with the IMDb, you know, the 50.
Yeah. Usually IMDb is way harsher. And they are. 30% for fans.
But those, yeah, okay.
So coming off those two, stellar.
Okay, take those into consideration. Let's jump to, what do we got, Barbarian?
Barbarian.
I have that one pulled up, right?
Yeah, yep.
So what do you think for Barbarian on Rotten Tomatoes?
I'm going to say 88% for critics and like 95%, 94% for audience.
It is 92% for critics.
Dude.
So they loved
it. Holy shit.
And 70% for audience.
You got to be shitting me.
Yeah, the critics loved it.
I can't believe the audience didn't like it more.
But here's where I go when we were talking about it, right? Like, I went to the movie with friends and my wife, and they love movies, but not the same way we do, right? We look at movies differently. So 92% would be us.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I think it would. 70% would probably be them.
I would have thought.
So that actually makes sense to me.
I would have thought the critics would be higher for sure. But man, that's crazy.
It's a fun one. I'll watch it again this month, in the month of October. So
that's crazy.
It's that rewatchability.
It is. Yep.
What about IMDb for Barbarian? What do you think?
I'm going to say that's usually. Oh man, let's go with the even 75%. 7.5, I should say.
7.0 out of 242,000.
Man,
that's pretty good though for IMDb.
It is, but that's bullshit. Come on, man.
Should be a little higher, but once again, it's more Barbarian hits differently for film enthusiasts than it does for people that are just like a fun, weird, scary movie.
Very true.
Right. So,
okay, let's move on to Weapons.
Okay.
Rotten Tomatoes. Any guesses for Weapons?
Man, I feel like it's got to be high. So, Rotten Tomatoes, let's go 94% critics, 88% audience.
Dude, you're pretty damn close. 93 critics, 85 audience.
Okay, I'm right there. I'm in the ballpark.
Yeah, you know, you've got this shit down, man. Now, let's move on to IMDb.
Okay, for Weapons. I feel like it's got to be high. 7.9?
Close, 7.6. Okay. Still, I think that's too low.
I think it should have broke the 8.0 barrier.
It's hard to do on IMDb, but I think they should have, for sure.
It is.
Now.
Okay, give me some Google. We have some Google reviews.
Here we go,
baby.
Okay. I'm just going to read. I got a 1-star here, and it's just.
Is this Barbarian or Weapons?
This is Barbarian. Okay. 1-star. From Reynard Gasavage.
Wait, his name's Reynard?
Reynard, yep.
Give it to me, Reynard.
This movie is so terribly bad. This is not a B film. This is a C film that is a black stain on Bill Skarsgård's good record. At least try to give you the illusion of characters behaving smartly or in a justifiable way. But I tuned out so fast after the main character made dumb illogical decision after dumb illogical decision. And then there's a bunch of spoilers.
Well, you're pulling that because I have one for Weapons, and we'll kind of do a couple back and forth if that works for you. Radio Rebel says, for Weapons, probably one of the most disappointing movies I've seen in theaters. I expected horror and suspense. Instead, got 2 hours of flashbacks and plot holes. I'm convinced people who rated it high just glazing the director or our bots. Take the money you'd spend on a ticket and popcorn and get yourself something nice. The movie feels slow And anytime you get anywhere, you're forced into a flashback. You're forced into a flashback.
Forced. So. Dude, angry, man. Angry. What is wrong with people?
I don't get it.
Okay, one more. I'm just going to read the first two. All caps. Do not waste your time. The film is incredibly moronic, cringe, slow as hell, predictable, not scary at all, and boring as hell. So that's just fantastic.
I think these are just people behind the keyboard that don't really want to dive in and discover. I think they're just people who are miserable. So they're in their own horror film, Alan.
You know, look, the internet is just now made for people who are just angry and just want to type. Like, yeah. And I get it. I understand.
No appreciation for fun things or things that are creative.
We need to start having fun, because otherwise we're all just going to go insane. We got to give our ratings.
Oh, yes. I'm sorry. I jumped in early.
No, you're good, dude. You go first.
Wow. Which one are we doing? Let's do Barbarian first. I'm going to go with, you know, we always go out of 10. So for Barbarian, because of the unpredictability, the act shifts, the excitement and the comedy. I mean, let's not forget that the mother dives off a water tower at the end, and I got thrown for this loop of like, what just happened? And also, for whatever reason, I loved it. I just love that she saved herself to save her quote unquote baby.
Amazing. And I love the off-camera gymnastics of the mother being on top of Tess and then landing under her somehow.
No one, yes, of course.
So good. Dude,
and
so
no
good.
One expected mother to even jump off and save her.
Exactly.
So that whole thing. And then you got to suck a teat. So I'm going to give it 8.2 suck a teats.
I just fucking love this movie, man.
That's great.
I love it. I just straight up 9.4 bottles of milk.
Damn, dog.
Yeah.
Going in hard. Look, I'm not saying this is a great movie, but you're going hard.
I'm going hard,
dude.
Man.
I love it.
Going hard.
I love it.
Okay, weapons.
Yeah, weapons for me, the rewatchability, which I think you brought up, which is a great point for me as a person who wants to continue to watch movies. Like, weapons is fantastic. I think it's deeper. I think the story hits harder. It's got more cultural and societal context. But I don't think it's quite, actually for me, it's not quite as good as Barbarian. I know that sounds crazy, but I'm not going to go too much lower. I'm going to keep it in the eights. I'm going to go 8.1 POVs.
Nice.
You know,
I
little,
like it.
A little subtext there. So.
I agree. It's not to disparage it, but it's not quite as good as Barbarian. And I think the humor went a long way in Barbarian. I think more humor would have really helped out weapons. I'm nitpicking, man. Like, I'm not saying it should have been fun. Like, I'm just saying it's such a heavy movie, and you can feel the grief, and you can feel the weight of what happened in this town. And a little comic relief would have helped a little bit, I think.
It's dark, it's deep, and yeah, I agree with you. Yeah,
I'm going 8.9 locks of hair.
Oh, he's going, wow.
Dude, I fucking love these movies, man.
I mean, that,
I love
look,
them.
If you're looking for a little insight, that scene where she comes in and cuts the hair, I mean, it's pretty good.
Like, you know what? There are some scary fucking movies.
Some really creepy things happening.
Yeah.
Great movie. Go
so
watch
good.
It.
It's fantastic.
But it sounds like for us, Barbarian is going to hold the crown.
It's so good, man. Yeah. This one is a rewatch of it. Like,
I would rewatch Weapons.
Weapons I'm watching probably every year, maybe.
I'm going to go every 2 or 3 years, but
that makes
but
sense.
Barbarian I'm watching every year.
Barbarian I could watch 2 to 3 times a year probably.
I'm not against that. Like, I could watch that a couple times a year and be perfectly happy.
Yeah. There are just
Mama. just hats off to Zach Cregger.
For real. Like, that's...
You just... Dude, you went from the whitest kids you know to some of the best horror films in the last 20 years.
And you know...
Just saying.
You know what's crazy? Like, again, I don't know the guy. I'm pretending like I do. I don't know the guy, but...
But he was going to do our podcast.
He was going to do our podcast. Was.
Now he's too big for us.
But every interview, every time I see him speak, they still do streams every once in a while with the Living Four members. He seems pretty much the same guy. Like, you don't know because I don't know him. But there's not, like, a lot of times you can tell when people change. I think there's a lot of truth to you remain the age at what you become famous. And he didn't become famous till he was in his 40s, basically.
He was our age.
Yeah, so, I mean, it makes sense.
So maybe he'll still do the podcast.
Maybe he will, dude. Maybe
he'll
he will.
Blow up our podcast.
Maybe I'll get Timmy. Timmy is another one of the whitest kids. He'll come on the show. I'm sure he will.
Let's get Timmy.
I'll reach out to Timmy.
Let's do it.
He does a horror movie podcast. Thanks for joining us for this double feature on the Tame Aperture Podcast. Gabe and Alan signing out.
The Tame Aperture Podcast is produced by Dutch Angle Pictures in association with Studio B Productions. Listen, watch, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, and YouTube.